I guess being one of the founders and guiding figures of the celebrated Emerson String Quartet and a very great violinist wasn't enough for Eugene Drucker. Now he's written a novel. The Savior is about a violinist in Germany who in the final weeks of World War II is forced to play for the inmates of a concentration camp. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mr. Drucker back to this show. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Gottfried Keller is exempted from military service, but he's been playing for wounded soldiers in hospitals and infirmaries. Were there musicians given those kinds of assignments?
You know, I'm not entirely sure, but I know that on the Allied side, that kind of thing did occur. In fact, a pianist whom I worked with many years ago as a young man accompanied Heifetz and told me how impressed he was that in some performances for soldiers, and I imagine some of them were wounded soldiers in infirmaries, that Heifetz seemed to give as much energy as if he were playing a concert in Carnegie Hall.
Although it's hard to imagine today sending around classical musicians to play for wounded soldiers.
Exactly.
Perhaps because the world has changed. Oh, also, perhaps the Nazis' attitude about music was different. They had a very weird relationship with music, didn't they?
Yes. We know that a lot of the top Nazis were obsessed with certain composers. Beethoven and Wagner, I would say, were the main composers by whom they were fascinated. And unfortunately, they co-opted some of that music and tried to use it for political purposes.
And the commandant of this concentration camp is a great lover of music.
That's right.
Now, the Gottfried Keller is not Jewish, but his closest friend and his fiancée were. This probably was a typical situation for German musicians at the time. What other choices would they have had other than to distance themselves from their former Jewish friends to avoid being punished for being a Jew lover?
I think that some liberal Germans left Germany as soon as the Nazis came to power. I know that one of my father's idols, Adolf Busch, with whom he later played in the famous Busch Quartet, left Germany in 1933, emigrated to Switzerland. He was disgusted by the Nazis and was not impressed by people like Furtwängler, who made an accommodation with the regime. I should add, though, that my father told me many years later that he thought that Furtwängler was maligned by a lot of the press in the United States, that he was in an ambiguous situation and did his best for at least 1 year after the Nazis came to power to keep 11 Jews in his orchestra, and he tried to protect them as long as he could.
Well, we have Keller's Jewish friend Ernst, also a violinist, fleeing when the Nazis took power.
Yes.
Is he based on your father?
He is.
When did your father leave?
Well, my father attempted to emigrate to England in 1934, but he was going as a tourist, and when the British immigration authorities searched his cabin on the ship, they found all sorts of letters of recommendation, which made it seem like he was intending to stay there, so they sent him back. A week after he left Cologne, he was there again, and he said that the next week he was very depressed because I think he had all his hopes and sights set on England. And then the next time he was able to leave the country for good was in September 1938 when he emigrated with the rest of his family to the U.S.
That's pretty late in the game, mm-hmm. actually. Is some of this based on things you talked about with him?
Yes. His experience during his graduation concert from the conservatory in Cologne, that's all there in the book. He was supposed to play the Brahms Violin Concerto, and when he came into the school one day, he saw his name crossed off the program that was posted in the bulletin board. And his teacher, Bram Eldering, who was Adolf Busch's teacher as well, and who many years earlier had been associated with Brahms, went with my father to the director's office and said, "If Drucker can't play the Brahms Concerto, I'm going to resign." And he was valued and revered enough that his threat carried some weight. They made a compromise that my father could play the first movement only of the Brahms Concerto. As the concert approached, my father got sick. He had the flu, but he was determined not to let that deter him and went through with the concert. The other thing he told me was that the first three rows of the concert hall were lined with brown shirts. Of course, that must have made him feel strange, to say the least, right before he began playing the concerto. But there was a silence before the orchestra began playing, and he heard a cough in that silence, and he recognized it as his own father's cough. Somehow that gave him the strength to go on.
My guest is Eugene Drucker, who's written a novel called The Savior. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Is this something that's been forming in the back of your head over the years as you've been one of the most celebrated musicians in America?
I've worked on it sporadically for a long time. Some of the ideas began to percolate in my mind in 1976 after I participated in the Queen Elizabeth competition in Brussels. While preparing for that competition, I played a number of concerts for patients in various kinds of hospitals, a drug rehabilitation center, an alcoholics ward, a psychiatric ward, a veterans hospital, and it gave me the ability to steel myself against potential distractions while performing.
Because that's something that Keller has to do here as well.
Yes, I took some of those experiences, transformed them, and put them in the introductory scenes in the first chapter.
Keller is told that he has to play for these concentration camp inmates, and this is near the end of the war. They're pretty much near death. It's because the commandant has wants to have some kind of an experiment on the power of music?
Yes, that's right. I doubt that any behavioral experiment like this actually took place, but we're all too familiar with the stories of anatomical experiments that they did. And some of the anatomical experiments involved putting people in water that was progressively cooled until it was close to freezing. And they wanted to see how near death they could bring people and then revive them. So that there's a similar idea at work in the experiment in my story, because the inmates of the camp have been deadened by their experiences there, and he selects a handful of them, 30. He can't do this on all the inmates of the camp because, of course, the camp has to produce some results in the form of labor that they're extracting from these prisoners as well. But he takes 30 inmates and wants to see what difference it will make if he changes their living conditions at first. He feeds them better, gives them much lighter workloads, and more freedom to move around in the camp. And this produces only minimal results, so he realizes he has to give them some kind of cultural stimulation to see if that will have some effect in reviving their spirits.
And then, to what end?
Because the big question. Keller doesn't know exactly what the purpose of the experiment is, and he's in a moral dilemma. He doesn't really have much choice anyway. He has to do what's being asked of him, but the question is how well can he do it? How much of his spirit will he put into these performances?
You have been playing Isai's L'Aurore, Hindemith, Bach Chaconne, which we opened with your performance of Bach Chaconne.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty great composers, but why those rather than others?
The repertoire for solo violin, for unaccompanied violin, is rather small. There are these six sonatas and partitas of Bach. There were some pieces written by earlier Baroque composers, especially Heinrich Bieber, but that has come to light more in the recent generations of historical performance practice, and I doubt that violinist of Keller's vintage would have been familiar with Bieber. So really the repertoire began and ended, so to speak, with Bach. And then there are these sonatas by Isai, which were based on the Bach sonatas and partitas. There were the 24 Paganini caprices, which were staples for any serious violinist development. And then there were a couple of modern pieces, two sonatas by Hindemith. And Hindemith was considered one of the degenerate composers by the Nazis because his music was dissonant and experimental and very unsentimental, everything against what the Nazis stood for.
So when Keller plays him, he's being a bit of a dissident, only
yes.
Barely.
Yeah, closet dissident.
One of the patients at a hospital that Keller plays at asks him, "Have you come to heal us?"
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this, to some degree, is about just how relevant music is, how much power art can have to heal. I once had a painting teacher who told me that the goal of his goal as a painter was to create paintings that if sick people touched them, they would be healed. Of course, that's a wonderful fantasy, but I don't know. Do you think that music has that kind of power?
I think that music can have a power to heal in the right circumstances. In a concentration camp, if music or any kind of art is up against the forces of evil, it can't really accomplish that much. We know that. I don't have any such claims for music. But in a normal society where people are dealing with all sorts of issues, including illness and sometimes death of loved ones, there are many stresses that we all have to face as we go through life. And I think that great art can provide solace and something more than that. It can provide the sense of a deep level of meaning in life at times when you might feel like you're losing your handle on it.
Keller was exempt from the draft because of a weak heart, and we know that he also had a weak heart on a personal level.
Yeah, almost everything that I write in this novel can be read on more than one level.
How is he a savior?
He's not really a savior. The question is, will he be able to save the inmates? Will he through his music, somehow accomplish the goals of the Commandant's experiment? But the question mark is, what will the Commandant do with the results of this experiment? If the experiment is successful in bringing the prisoners back to life, will that mean that the Commandant will somehow try to exempt these prisoners from the malevolent machine that's grinding down all of them? And then, of course, there is the level of Keller's lapsed Christianity. He does think a lot about Judas and to some extent identifies with Judas and his betrayal of the Savior.
In your acknowledgments, you thank J.B. Keller. Did you name your protagonist, I can't say your hero, after somebody you admire?
No, it wasn't that, but she was once the publicist for the Emerson String Quartet, Johanna Keller. And after that, after she was no longer a publicist, she began writing. I think she's written many different kinds of books, some perhaps under an assumed name. But I approached her for some help with this manuscript about 9 years ago, I think, and she was very helpful in her reading of it.
Well, the book is terrific, and I'm not sure that it's going to cause all sorts of confusions for you. You may start writing more and more novels. But as a member of the Emerson String Quartet, Eugene Drucker has received 8 Grammys, the Avery Fisher Prize, and 3 Gramophone Awards. He has just written his first novel, The Savior. It's published by Simon & Schuster. And I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me on the show, Leonard.